This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
Well, thank you very much for the organizers for this really wonderful and inspiring conference. And thank you all for coming this morning. I know it's not that easy to get up after last night, so I'm very happy you made it. And I think that in a way it's good that I'm speaking last, because I will be drifting our attention more to the world of the heroes. What I would want to talk about are the gigantomachy-like scenes and giant-like figures that we find in the Iliad and the Odyssey. What I mean by that is that although we do not find a description of a gigantomachy in Homer's poems, a constant motif of creatures living on Earth that are powerful and that are trying to physically de-establish the Olympus returns constantly and is very important. So what I would like to do is first to show you the characteristics of this generation and then try to relate it a bit to the idea of the giants. But first, let us speak a bit about the giants. Well, David has shown us a bit like what the gigantomachy is like in the classical and Hellenistic age. I'm interested in the archaic age. And in the archaic age, we don't have a very vast material for the gigantomachy. Our first explicit allusion, explicit mention of the gigantomachy is made in two places in Pindar. So in one, he shows how Heracles was fighting with the giants. In another, we see the giants subdued to the thunderbolts of Zeus and the bow of Apollo. We have more material on vases, so we have some iconographical material, but this is also relatively late because the first ones comes from the second quarter of the 6th century. And the big question is, was there an earlier gigantomachy? And did Homer and Hesiod know a gigantomachy? Where are they referring to it? So we have some passages that would suggest that that they know a gigantomachy. So in the Odyssey, it is said that Eurymedon was king over the insolent giants and that he brought destruction upon them. But is it a gigantomachy or not? That's not very easy to say. And then in the Theogony, where the gigantomachy would be theoretically very much at place, we don't have much. Professor Jane Strauss-Clay argues that this is Hesiod's idea, that narrative idea. But well, we have a very short passage where it is said that Heracles accomplished a wonderful deed and is now living on Olympus. So that may be an allusion to the gigantomachy. Finally, the lyric poet Xenophanes says that one shouldn't speak about the giants at the feast because those are the subjects of our ancestors. But as you see, this is not very much, and it's not very easy to say clearly if there is a gigantomachy or not. But even if there isn't a gigantomachy, the giants themselves do function in the earliest text, and they are presented in a quite interesting way, which will be important for us. Because on the one hand, they seem to be connected very much to the gods. In the Odyssey, it is said that the Phaeacians often receive visits from the gods because they are close and kin to them, just like the race of the giants. And in the Theogony, we have the giants' genealogy, so which was mentioned several times in the previous days, so that they come from Uranus' drops that fell on Gaia. So the giants have a very high divine provenance. They are in a way connected with the gods. But on the other hand, they also seem to be quite close to humans. In one breath, Hesiod says that the muses will chant of the race of men and giants, as if both were in a kind closely connected. Jane Strauss-Clay argues that also we can consider the giants to be the fathers, with the Melian nymphs, to be fathers of humanity. But be that as it may, we certainly see on the vases a kind of parallel between the world of the heroes and the world of the giants. because in the archaic age they still don't have the serpentine legs, but are presented in a human form, and most of all they have human weapons, so they're not fighting with rocks but with javelins. So they remind us a lot of the heroes. And we don't only have, not only the giants are quite human-like, but many types of heroes are presented as being giant-like. So we have this famous brigands with which Theseus fights, which are not born from Gaia, but which also represent this model of being overpowerful, too big, and audacious, aggressive. And most of all, we have this Bronze Age in the Hesiod works and days, which reminds us of the giants, because this Bronze Age of heroes, of well, men who live before the heroic age, are described as being very big, very strong, and excessive in their aggression, in their warlike attitude. So I would like to follow that trail of humans that represent type of the giant, that which share the giant's feature, and to look for them in the Iliad and the Odyssey, because I think that we can find them there. But we will not find them in the main narration, because in the world of the Trojan War, the heroes are different from their posterity. They talk to the gods, they have some contact with them, and were presumably stronger, because we see the famous two passages where a hero lifts a rock, and Homer reveals a bit of his word, saying that not even two men would be capable of lifting the rock. But still, in their moral attitude, in their behavior, the Trojan War generation seems to be quite close to their posterity. They are not perfect, they make mistakes, and they are often hubristic, and they have to bear the consequences. But when they are faced to a god, when God tells them clearly of their will, they mostly will obey. So Achilles will not kill Agamemnon when Athena tells him to stop, and he will give the body of Hector back to Priam when the gods tell him to stop. But if we look, step up of the main narration and try to look at the digressions, we can see that the situation is quite different, and this is what I want to show. So in those digressions, we find an old generation of heroes. The contexts in which we may find them are quite multiple. So we have paradigm, so when a hero gives some advice to another, he usually refers to the old generation. We have some family stories, we have stories connected to some objects that were made in the past. We have God's reminiscence, and we have a long Nekuya passage where we find quite a lot of old generation's heroes. What is important here is that the old generation heroes is not something accidental. It is a constant point of reference for the Trojan War generation. And it is also important that the Trojan War generation is aware of their adventure and is aware that those adventures were different than theirs. We have two passages where the heroes of the Trojan War generation distance themselves from this old generation. So in the Odyssey, Odysseus says that he would fight with everybody but the archers of old, Eurytus and Heracles. And in the first book of the Iliad, Nestor says that this old generation of hero, men nurtured by Earth, were strongest and they fought with the strongest. And in a sense, all those features of the old generation will be revolving around this being strongest and fighting with the strongest. But we can start to analyze their feature with the most basic, so their physical side. So as I said, the Trojan War generation is not weak, they are quite powerful. But compared to them, the old generation seems really gigantic. A word used to describe them is Pelorios, so also a word that is used for Ares. And we have some measures that can give us a hint. So it is said that that Tityos was measuring 9 roots. The same size is shared by Otus and Ephialtes, and when they are only 9 years old. And finally, Orion is said to be the same size, so they are very gigantic. If they are that big, we suppose that they are also that strong. And the strength is important because it helps them to deal with the world in which they are in. At least it's often underlined. Homer eliminates many fantastic elements from his description of the Trojan War, yet he does not eliminate them in the digressions that concern the older generation. So we see quite a lot of heroes fighting with monsters. We see Heracles fighting the sea monster, Meleager fighting the great boar, Bellerophon fighting the Chimaira. We see a lot of heroes fighting the centaurs. Of course, we could say that Odysseus meets many monsters too, but this is a very specific moment. He's in the edges of the world, wandering, and this will be closed when he will leave those edges of the world. And it's also important that Odysseus does not really fight. He more escapes the monstrous or tries to outsmart the monstrous. But though the fights with the monsters seem to be quite spectacular, this is not what Homer concentrates on. And in most passages, we see some aspects of the relation of the old generation with the gods. But we are not here in the old golden age of humanity where gods and heroes live close and in peace. Rather, they live close and in war. So the old generation uses its power mostly to fight with the gods. And we hear of it first when Diana speaks to Aphrodite, and she tells the story, famous story of Otus and Ephialtes, who closed Ares in a bronze jar. And a passage that we talked about, Ares would have died if the mother of the giants didn't help. So this is very important because, well, binding a god is, well, the closest way we can get to make him subordinate. In the next passage, we see Heracles using his arrows against the powerful god Hades and Hera. And then those passages are followed by others. So we see Dionysus chasing Lycurgus, so the god, very afraid, has to escape. We see Otus and Ephialtes again, though this time in Hades, trying to do a very wonderful deed to pile Ossa on Olympus and Pelion on Ossa and try to climb to Olympus, like to devastate it. And we also have Tityos who tries to rape Leto. And those fights with gods are not only restricted to attacks and assaults, but to all kinds of rivalry. We see Eurytus and Idas trying to compete with Apollo in archery. We see Niobe trying to compete with Leto in a very womanly way, so by claiming that she's a better mother for having more children. We see Tamiris claiming that he's better than the Muses, for he sings better. And we also see some, well, not very defined kinds of offense to the gods, so Sisyphus and Tantalus in Hades. So Homer does not elaborate on it, but, well, we know some versions in which they offended the gods. So in a way, those rivalries are as serious as the fight, because that shows that the old generation feels to be as powerful as the gods, or even more powerful. They seem to be capable to do all the same things. The relation of the old generation with the gods is not restricted only to fighting, because we also hear of some romances between the heroes and the goddesses. So Circe tells about Orion and Dawn, and also of Jasion and Demeter. We also learn of Heracles and Hebe, but there he's on Olympus. In a way, the romances show the power of of all generation and their closeness to the divine word, because well, the goddesses wanted to have a romance with them, so it shows that they have quite a high status. But it also shows their hybris, because men shouldn't love goddesses. This should be restricted to the word of the divine. And we see gods being quite angry about it. Kirke says that the jealousy is the reason for the anger. Not all romances, as I mentioned, are done with mutual consent, because you have also this very hubristic romance of teachers trying to rape Leto. In all those passages, we do not see much of the social relations between the old generation heroes, because mostly when they fight with the gods and when they fight with monsters, they are shown as acting alone. So the biggest alliance against the god is that of the twin brothers, so that doesn't really count as a community. Yet we see some passages where the social relations are shown, and it is important that usually we see much of treachery and treachery in such relations. Of course, in the world of the Trojan Wars, there's a lot of hubris directed towards men. The Trojan War starts with the abduction of Helen, which is not the nicest thing to do. But Homer restricts many acts of very unhonorable kind of hubris. So we do not see attempts to kill Palamedes, we do not see Odysseus trying to kill Diomedes. But in the old generation world, we see such acts being quite numerous. So Heracles is said to be to killed Iphitus, who was his guest. We see Antea trying to seduce Bellerophon, and when he refuses, her husband doesn't even want to fight him, but he sends him back with those baneful signs. We see Neleus imprisoning the seer Melampus. We see Meleager being a kind of extreme version of Achilles, refusing for a very long time to fight back for his city. We see Lycurgus killing by guile the hero Aretus. And we see Laomedon, who doesn't pay his divine, well, though he thinks those are human, workers, and he frightens them that he will cut the ears off. So, in a way, we see that the pattern through which this generation is constructed is a power which produces a hubris. But we need to think where the power of this generation comes from, what is different between them and the generation of the Trojan War heroes. And what is different is mainly their provenance, because on the Trojan War field, we see some direct sons of gods or goddesses, and they are also quite exceptional, like Achilles. But those personas are in the minority, while in the old generation age, we see quite a lot of true hemitoi, which are usually sons of Zeus or Poseidon. So we see Heracles, Perseus, Minos for Zeus, we see Otus, Phialtes, Eurytus for Poseidon, we see also Gaia being the mother of Tityos. In a way, this is what will make them very powerful. And as Maciej Poprocki once noted to me, they usually have also a divine grandfather. So in a way, they are not only half divine, they are like three quarters divine. This generation, this hubristic generation, has to come to an end, since we see that the Trojan War heroes are much more pious. But we do not see any big catastrophe. We do not see a flood eliminating all those heroes together. But I think that we could distinct two processes that make this generation come to an end. So the first one is that although the heroes are not eliminated en masse, they are all eliminated by the gods. As a punishment for their deeds. So it is often underlined that this old generation heroes did not live long because they were punished by the gods. Usually they are punished by Apollo's arrows, but also by Zeus lightning, which is very impressive because we see Zeus mostly not being very close to the field, to humans, in the Trojan War generation. So Ephialtes and Otus are killed by Apollo's arrows. We see Aretus killed by Apollo too. We see Lycurgus blinded by Zeus, and it's said that he did not live long. We also see the Hebristic Jason, who had the romance, killed by Zeus too. But to really stop the end, to really stop the old generation, the gods not only have to eliminate them, but in a way make it so that the heroes will never be the same again. And this is what they do by what we said, that we do not see much of a true Hemitheoi in the Trojan War battlefield. So the gods retreat from the world of humans sexually. And we do not hear of any other romances that will produce new child, so that Hemitheoi will become a part of history. Men will have still some kind of divine pedigree. A lot of Trojan War heroes still have divine grandfathers, but this element of divine will become weaker and weaker in them, and so they will become weaker and weaker. But I think that it's not only the sexual retreat that is important, because if we look at one of the Hemitheoi, Sarpedon, we see that his relation with his divine father is not very close. We see Zeus, who lets Sarpedon die, and Hera says that if he would intervene in Sarpedon's death, all the gods would revolt against him. But if we look back at the older generation, we see that Zeus constantly tries to help Heracles, even against Hera. So we have a very famous scene when Hera is suspended on anvils because Zeus is angry at her for having chased Heracles. And other gods trying to help Hera, and Zeus is throwing them away of Olympus. So we see that in the old generation times, the gods in a way cared too much about the humans. They cared too much about their sons. They wanted to romance with the women, so they were mingling in this divine world. They also captured some young boys like Ganymede. So in a way, it's also the gods' fault what happens, because they want to be too close to the human world. So when they will retreat emotionally from the human world, the situation will become more calm. Finally, I think that it is not accidental that Homer shows also the Theban War as being deprived of those fantastic and cruel elements. We do not see Athena trying to give immortality to Tydeus, or Tydeus sucking his enemy's brain. So I think that in a way those two wars are important because they are an exceptional moment in time where all the heroes gather together and they form a strong community which will together be responsible for everyone's individual act. So when one man acts according to the hubris, all the heroes will suffer, as we see in the case of Achilles, and he is hubristic towards men and not the gods. So we can suppose that if a hero of this time was trying to act hubristically against the gods, the punishment for all would be terrible. And in a way, we do not know this about the Theban War, but the Trojan War is certainly a part of Zeus' machination. So in a way, we can consider this plan of directing the humans' force against other humans and not against monsters and gods as this Zeus' brilliant plan. This old generation heroes, for the Trojan War heroes, the old generation heroes are their fathers, they are people who they once met, or just people from stories. But the Homeric audience, seeing all those digressions from a distance, can see a certain pattern. So they see this very important pattern of a power being connected to hubris, and we could say the pattern of power bringing hubris and hubris bringing punishment, which will be generally very important in the Greek culture. So in a way, Homer does with this old generation what he cannot do with the generation of the Trojan War heroes, because he has a plan to show them in a very human way. So also they have to be hubristic in a human way. But by this old generation, he can show another side of hubris, this hubris against the gods. And most important, I think, is that by showing this old generation which lives close to the gods and which ends up in a terrible way, he shows why the gods and men cannot live together, because this ended badly. Their words have to be separated. So we can now relate this idea to the giants. I suppose that you already see many similar patterns. So both groups have this excessive size and strength, and both groups use this size and strength towards the gods. We also see them both having this kind of sexual hubris. So we see Titus trying to rape Leto. We hear of a giant trying to rape Hera. They both end in a very similar way. So they are mostly shot down by Zeus and by Apollo's arrows. And mostly, they both represent a similar type of being. So they are suspended between the world of the divine and the human world. They share many features with the gods. They are certainly unhumanly powerful, but on the other hand, they are mortal and they live on Earth, so they're doomed to die. And I think it's important because the they, in a way, they are like they are too ambitious. Being suspended between those two worlds, they are too ambitious because, in a way, they feel they could belong to the divine because they are so close to it. Yet they are always restrained to be finally just creatures of Earth. But we also see some important differences, and the first one is obvious, but it is important, is the fact that the giants are giants and the heroes are heroes, so those are different groups. What I mean by that is that the gigantomachy is something that does not really inflict the human's history. So between the old generation and the heroes of the Trojan War, we have this continuity. The Trojan War heroes are descendants from this hubristic generation. So in a way, this excessive hubris here becomes a part of the mythical history of men. It is not separated from their history. And the second important thing is that in the gigantomachy myths, we see the giants attacking en masse. And here we have mostly concentrations of the solitary act. And in Homer's version, the community is rather something that restrains heroes. We do not see the community trying to together attack the gods, but the community helps men to understand that they should better stick to their human side. So to end this, I would like it's something I'm still thinking about. So how can we really relate those giants to heroes? What I mean is Homer has in mind, does Homer have in mind the giants and the gigantomachy? And does he want to his audience to have it in mind? Well, I still don't have an answer, but I think that it doesn't have to be so. Because he speaks of famous passages of famous acts of the heroes. So, and he almost does not allude to the giants. So I think that in a way it would be very difficult for the audience to relate this just like easily just by hearing to the race of the giants. But I think that because we have so many similar ideas, it proves that there must be a very strong pattern of a overpowerful human or human-like creatures that try to de-establish the Olympic order. And in a way, this pattern may inspire all the giants and the heroes. So we could not really give a linear, we could not say if the giants inspire the heroes, the specific group of heroes, or the other way around. I think they rather come from a similar idea and they influence each other. Later on, the giants will become very, very separate beings with those serpent legs and monstrous character. But I think that in the archaic age, the line between the giants and the heroes are still very blurred. Thank you.